Are you ready to rewind? Take a nostalgia-filled ride back to a simpler time. It's Acid Wash Memories, a retro pop culture celebration. And now your hosts, Joe Marotta and Michael Quinn.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 67 of Acid Wash Memories, a retro pop culture celebration. Today we're talking about Woodstock 99. That's right. I'm Joe Marotta alongside Michael Quinn. How you doing there, Michael?
Howdy doody.
Howdy doody. Woodstock, the bad one.
Yeah, this is the stinky one.
This is the literal stinky one, folks.
Yeah, it's stinky. It's very stinky. It's rude.
It's a little crude.
It's mean.
It's even lewd. We got more rhymes for you coming in just a short amount of time. But thank you guys, I'm sorry, for being with us here for episode 67 of Acid Wash Memories. Hey, if this happens to be your first time, what we do here is a retro pop culture celebration. Each week is something completely different from the world of retro pop culture. And if you're not interested in Woodstock 99, just skip back through what, Quinn? There's 66 episodes available.
In the archives.
In the archives. So you're bound to find something you like there. Last week we talked about Super Mario 64. Mm-hmm. We got more stuff coming next week. But today we talk about Woodstock 99. And before we get into the mosh pit, I want to remind you guys to head on over to Twitter at AWM Podcast. Follow us there. And you can also join our very friendly Facebook group. Quinn, so friendly.
So friendly. Home crap home.
Home crap
all
home.
All the stuff. It's got it.
All the stuff. It's called Acid Wash Memories, just like the name of the show. And you can talk to hundreds of other retro pop culture fanatics. All right, so that's it for the particulars.
Yeah.
Now, this is kind of a sequel episode, Quinn, because we did talk about Woodstock 94, available in the archives.
Stop!
Woodstock 94, if you recall, we talked about the original, the 69.
Right. That one.
Remember the original
kind. We were 100% alive for that.
Oh, yeah, we were definitely there. And we got to see Crosby, Stills, Nash, and also Young.
I watched the moon landing like right before that.
So. Yeah, I remember. I was with you. Yeah. It was a great time.
What an evening at my house.
What an evening at Quinn's house in the summer of 69.
Nice.
But anyway, we talked about how the original one was built on somewhat of the hippie ethos to a degree, but overall like a 60s ethos, right?
Yes.
And when 94 came along for the 25th anniversary, that was seen as like, this is a slap in the face to the point of Woodstock. This is so commercial.
At the same time, there was demand. I think we discussed this, right? You had children who grew up with their parents being like, Woodstock, it's the best concert ever. It'll never be replicated or duplicate, whatever.
Yep.
And like, kids were like, well, I want to go to that.
I want to see Richie Havens play for 3 hours.
Horrible.
He's good.
I hate the opening.
I know. It is long.
I hate the opening. That's why I'm always like, what? This is the best concert ever?
I think the thing with when people think of 94, they think of the commercialism to a degree because it was very heavily promoted and it was on MTV, pay-per-view, and all mm-hmm. that.
Which is of the time, though.
It is that's of the time.
Like,
it's a way to distribute.
I feel like that's harped on like it's like a problem when it's more reflective of its time period.
Absolutely. If they had pay-per-view in 69, you know would have been on it.
Right.
You know it would have been.
Mm-hmm.
MTV's Woodstock Weekend starts Friday on MTV.
Sorry, I didn't know you were in there.
That's okay.
Woodstock 94, sponsored by Pepsi.
But I think people remember the mud fight. They remember Green Day and the Red Hot Chili Peppers in the light bulb costumes.
Yeah.
They've certainly,
stuff happened.
Yeah. Certainly Country Joe and the Fish.
Yeah, them.
They love
They're
them.
Back.
But only 5 years later happened to be the 30-year anniversary. And
now, can I say something here?
I would like you to.
Doesn't it seem more like they should have done 99? Like, they shouldn't have even done 90. Like, you know
yes.
what I'm saying? Like, 30 years seems significant, no?
Right. And going 5 years later, that is a significant gap in terms of, like, if you're living your day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
But in an anniversarial gap, which I don't think is a word, but you get it.
Yeah.
Well, because that isn't actually a word.
That's not a lot of time, right? It's like, Woodstock 94, Woodstock 99, what's next? Woodstock 2004?
The only thing that it's enough time for a different crop of kids
yeah,
to be introduced to it, right? Because you have to,
that's a good
I always
point.
Think of it like in like high school graduating classes, like 4 years is like pretty much a generation of kids, right?
That's a fair point, Quinn.
Because they're, you know, all 4 years and then they're out.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So if you do it 5 years later, it's a brand new generation of kids who didn't get to go to Woodstock 94.
Yeah, new graduating class, if you will,
yeah.
Right? There's been tons of documentaries pretty recently on Woodstock 99. We're not here to rehash all of that. We're just going to give our overall thoughts on it. I certainly remember being cognizant. But I think one thing to consider before we get into how we got to Woodstock 99 is the changes in the musical landscape, even mm-hmm. in those five short years, Quinn. Because
yes.
94 was very much alt rock was very
yeah,
big
we're in
still.
The height of it. And I don't know, like, what were they classifying Green Day as, like, punk?
They were, but even broader, they would just be considered under the alternative banner.
Alternative always felt too catch-all to me.
It is a catch-all.
And how do you become unalternative? Because once Green Day became mainstream, were they still considered alternative?
The same thing with indie these days, where it's like you now indie is a sound rather than like a classification of
a band
status.
That has no money.
Yeah, and not have a label.
And like the worst label, probably, right, like somebody's house.
Guy's garage, yeah. Right?
So a lot of the independent record labels use Orchard. It's a common service. Like I said, it's owned by Sony. It's just a whole lot of bullshit, in my opinion, honestly.
Rock was still very big in 94. No Doubt came up after that. And The Offspring and Green Day, even Bad Religion. Foo Fighters emerged after 94. You know, right. This is right after Nirvana was
Woodstock.
So there
was some bands kicking around. But I would say, you know, the musical landscape by 99 to me...
By 99, yes.
Started to become Britney Spears and Backstreet Boys and
NSYNC.
You know, like a lot of these pop group and pop princesses of the world started to like, this was their time. We're redoing this, right? That's, like it's like the 60s or something, like early 60s.
That's 100% true. The new wave of boy bands and pop music had, like the Spice Girls had come and gone in the mainstream in between the two Woodstocks.
I would say the Spice Girls were weirdly influential because then it kind of proved some point that like, oh, you can do this kind of old school bubblegum like pop music and it will sell.
That's a good point. It's a fair point. The rock side of things, mainstream wise, underwent a significant change because whereas you had this somewhat accessible commercial music that the Red Hot Chili Peppers were doing by the late night with like Californication, the Foo Fighters, The Color and the Shape, Green Day, Offspring, all of them that we mentioned, something emerged in the alternative scene that it was certainly new. In fact, it was known as new metal. And we're talking about, you know, Korn.
Like Slipknot.
Yeah, really. Limp Bizkit.
These are the bands. Now, Limp Bizkit, though, had a bit of mainstream appeal because it was like merging hip hop and rock and roll together.
New metal.
Yeah, but I felt like it was Limp Bizkit specifically and like Kid Rock. They were more geared towards the mainstream because even had a little country ish to them.
Kid Rock definitely.
Yeah, like so, the, you know what I'm saying.
From Detroit, by the way.
I'm saying those had a broader appeal. When I think of like new metal, I think of people in JNCO jeans and like black makeup and shit,
possibly
and, like,
a mask,
yelling
of some kind.
Stuff. Like
you're thinking of GWAR, perhaps. And
yeah, I guess. No, but people in padded rooms and shit.
But I mean, because again, we're doing like a catch-all. The way alternative is a catch-all. I'm using new metal as a catch-all. Like Marilyn Manson's not really new metal, but he fit into the
His
overall
look
aesthetic
is
here.
What these a lot of these new metal bands adopted, right? The Marilyn Manson look.
Yeah, and
black lipstick and shit.
Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails and stuff like that. But anyway, the bottom line here to sum this up is that the music scene had changed, and that is reflected in not only the acts that perform at Woodstock 99, but also in the attitude, and that becomes
Absolutely.
Very important.
Woodstock 99.
Michael Lang was the promoter of both the 1969 and 94 Woodstocks, and he teamed up again with John Scher, who is from New Jersey, in case you were wondering.
It wouldn't be Woodstock without Michael Lang.
You need Michael Lang.
He's been the constant in this story. He's the promoter. He's the guy. He's the like Vince McMahon of Woodstock.
I'm happy to welcome back to the show Michael Lang.
Yeah.
Now, the thing about 94, like we said, is it did not leave a great taste in most people's mouths. The risk of rain was always a threat when you're doing an outdoor event. But undaunted, they soldiered on.
Isn't rain kind of an attraction for Woodstock,
I guess,
though?
At this point. We got rain at two of them.
Yeah, it's kind of like it better rain. You know what I mean? Like,
that's a good point, Quinn. It's like it's Christmas time, it better snow, right?
It's almost, and I feel bad for the promoters because there was like an expectation of like a mud fight or something, right? And like how do you plan around like, man, we gotta like pick a day it's gonna rain, right? Like, how do you even predict that?
I guess you gotta get a giant hose if it doesn't rain.
Maybe look on the Farmer's Almanac, what are the most common rain days of the summer?
In England, it's like every day. They should have done it in
England.
But
here, you gotta
work
some guesstimation going on.
Serious guesstimation.
Oi, mate, it doesn't rain every day over on our side of the pond, yeah? Don't be a plonker. Hang on, have to close me window. Fish and chips.
The site they chose this time around, as they were planning this in 98 into 99, was in Rome, New York, which is in Oneida County in New York. Somewhat smack dab in the middle of the state. It'd be central New York.
Still, anything above New York City is upstate.
That's what we call it here, yeah, colloquially. Please don't write letters. But of course, it is part of the Utica-Rome Metropolitan Statistical Area.
I see.
And I always like to mention, I have been to Utica, and it was quite boring.
Did you meet Mike Francesa there?
No, he was not in Utica, unfortunately. Yeah. And I think he pronounces it Utica.
All right, wait a second. Okay. Why would I be in Utica?
Now, Rome, not in Italy, has about 32,000 people. So it's not extremely small, you know, like some
it's
other towns.
It's not that like the first one where they were like on Max Jaeger's farm in the middle of nowhere.
With 900 people
live
there.
The roads aren't even like ready for this. Yeah. Like, it's like, that's how like nothing it is.
Exactly. 75 square mile town, so it isn't small. And it's over 100 miles from both the original site, which was in Bethel, New York. Remember, it wasn't really in Woodstock, in case you didn't listen to that one. Mm-hmm. They just named it after Woodstock,
New York. I don't think any of them were in Woodstock.
No, zero of them were. And it's also 100 miles from the one in 94, which was in Saugerties, New York. And the site they chose was a former Air Force base, which had been decommissioned only a few years earlier in 1995.
And I know that this would become a point of contention because no grass.
Hangars and shit
and
everywhere.
It's hot as shit and you're on pavement on a runway.
It's pretty awful, actually. Yeah.
Can't even sit. Like, you just burn your ass. I know. It's true.
Well, it is an ass-burning event, Quinn. The promoters, though, were determined to avoid that whole gate-crashing incident that had occurred at the previous ones. And what they did, Langenshire, they characterized the site as defensible, meaning they installed a 12-foot wall made of plywood and steel to prevent all this gate crashing.
This all sounds horrible.
It is.
This sounds like a terrible idea.
I don't think this is not a story where the ending is in question or is a mystery to most people,
but
right?
I mean, you're already seeing the signs. Let's put a giant wall around it. Let's put it on a hot-ass airstrip. We're setting seeds here for a disaster.
Yeah, there are seeds.
Concert promoters were at a loss as to what went wrong.
I can't give you an explanation.
Lang called it the peace wall, you know, in keeping with the whole Woodstock theme. Yeah,
The paywall. Yeah.
The firewall. So numerous volunteers were invited to paint on sections of the panels to make it look nice, which is really cool.
That's nice of them. Keeping that hippie spirit.
Keeping
right?
it alive, man. So there are going to be two main stages, but there were also the alternate stages. There was a nighttime rave hangout in one of the converted hangars.
Right. Now, this thing right here, this is actually like kind of early for this, right? Because a lot of other concerts to this day would do this concept of like, what if we have multiple areas and whatever kind of genre of music you can go find it.
That's
right?
A great point. Yes, there was also a sports park and a film festival. Right. IFC actually sponsored
this. This is actually like a very modern thing that they were like kind of early to the game on with Woodstock. This is like an actual good idea.
I think you're right. I think the approach here, it isn't bad in theory, but maybe the paywall notwithstanding.
And the pavement.
Yeah, exactly. Sadly enough, Pavement the band isn't even here.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
They should have been. This would be their
venue. This is their show, man. Advance tickets were going to cost $150 if you ordered in advance. And
$99.
Oof. $180 at the gate. That's a nice gate.
Mm-hmm.
$400.
Well, it's 3 days, right? Actually,
4 days.
4 days. And you know, with the inflation from the 60s, actually, that's decent.
Still
that's
a lot of money.
That's not as bad as I would for 4 days of music, though. Like, that's
fair way to
not
look
the
at
worst
it.
Thing ever.
Fair way to look at it. So 400,000 people wound up attending. Want that number to just stick in there for a second.
That's a lot.
400,000.
Is that more than all of them?
Yeah, but you know the amount of tickets they sold.
How many?
187,000.
Oh, so I guess that walled in more.
I guess not, Quinn. This was much more commercial than the much maligned 1994. But again, modern ATMs. Email stations, because remember, what is internet? Now we know what it is.
Well, Allison should know.
What is internet anyway?
That reeks of, we are hip. We're cool.
It does.
Why the fuck would you be sending an email in the middle of Woodstock?
What if you got to pay your credit card bill or something?
What is that's like a business thing. I don't want to do that I don't want to have anything to do with the email while I'm here. Maybe a text message, but we don't even have that.
What if you're a stockbroker?
Yeah,
why would you be at Woodstock?
Well, because it's $180 or whatever. So only stockbrokers allowed.
That's, seriously. And there were various vendor malls, quote unquote. This time around, it was clear they were trying to turn a profit because 94 resulted in a major loss.
Well, this has a lot to do, too, and I know Michael Lang's discussed it in, like, documentaries on this, is, like, the first two, a lot of, like, lost money and, like, a lot of angry bankers. Like, were, like, the results of this.
Some of them on Wall Street.
This feels like the result of, like, what if we could do the Woodstock thing but actually turn a fucking profit, right?
I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Yeah. Yes. Vendors, even, to sell there paid $500, which to me sounds reasonable. $900 today, that would be, mm-hmm. in 2024 money. That doesn't sound too bad to get a place to sell for four-day festival, right? $500
400,000 people?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? You're going to make that back easily.
It's pretty reasonable. MTV, of course, poked their nose in and put it on pay-per-view.
But that gets you automatic money that you don't even have to do any. You just let them in.
And guess what? Buy-wise, about 500,000 people ordered this at a price of $59.95.
That's about normal pay-per-view prices.
It's
in
pretty
that,
good.
In that time period.
Again,
yes.
4 days, yeah. Right? For comparison, 1994 had 220,000. So we've doubled the buys. And this is not a case, like most places were pay-per-view capable by 94.
It sounds like they made their investment money before they even started, right?
They were very wise about it.
That's why it's kind of weird that they did the wall when, if you think about it, like they probably were like already in the black before the thing even started.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
No, you're right. All we need now is for the show to go well and then everything's perfect, right? No issues, no incidents, and everything will be fine. Uh-huh. So we're going to run down some of the bands that played on these 4 days. And, you know, we may play some music. Maybe some will be dropped in. But let's just talk about some of the artists. This is not everyone. This is not all-encompassing.
The music feels like a very minor topic in all of this.
It really does, Gwen. Yeah. It really does. We mentioned this is a four-day festival. It started on Thursday, July 22nd, 1999. This was known as the pre-show. Yes, pre-show. The only notable people that I found on here for me were Third Base. That's rap from the 80s.
I see.
Vertical Horizon, who actually was up and coming at the time. They went on to have like a little niche for themselves. You ever hear of them?
No.
You probably heard some of their songs.
I probably, as is with a lot of late 90s bands, if they weren't megastars, you'd have to like play me the song. Like, you know what I mean? That's like how I would recognize it.
Well, the good thing is here on this show, we can play you the song, Quinn. So let's just, let's do Everything You Want by Vertical Horizon, okay? Rising
at the back of your mind. Oh, I know this
You know
song.
This one, right?
Now I know it. So this, did they do anything after this?
The thing about Vertical Horizon, this came out right around that time. So this is like when they kind of broke through, so to speak.
We're promoting the album at Woodstock 99.
Pretty much. What a wise idea.
Yeah.
And then our good friend of the show, Matthew Toy, he'll like this one because George Clinton and the P-Funk All-Stars appeared.
Excuse me?
You know who George Clinton is? Parliament Funkadelic?
Oh, yeah, that George Clinton.
This is the George Clinton.
The P-Funk.
Bill Clinton, actually.
When you say the P-Funk.
That's what they... that's what I said, Quinn.
P-Funk.
I said what I said.
Yeah.
And then Friday the 23rd, in earnest, hey, Vern, we begin. Here's a name for you, James Brown.
Oh, there you go. That's a big boy.
Definitely fits into that new metal culture that was going on
at
the time.
James Brown in the 90s was having a little resurgence, no?
He was.
Especially after Rock.
And especially
in the late 80s.
Especially after Prison.
Yeah.
That's not necessary.
Jamiroquai, you've heard of Jamiroquai, right? DMX, Ruff Ruff.
Oh, Woof Woof's there?
Woof Woof is there,
I like Woof Woof.
Big fan of the Woof. A couple of people, not a lot. I think it's about 5 or 6. That played 94, also played 99. It's not that many, just to give you an idea how much stuff has changed. One of those bands is Live. Remember we talked about Live last time in 94?
Yeah.
They had their like following, but they were never like a major band.
You know what's weird about Woodstock now that we're going over some of the bands?
Yeah.
How come it's never like the largest, like every Woodstock never really had like the largest band of the day, you would think, right? Like whoever that may be.
I think part of it is they can't afford them or the bands feel it's beneath them.
But it's Woodstock.
Yeah, but they don't care.
I feel by 99 it had enough prestige.
Did it?
Yes.
You think?
As far as a thing they talked about on like Behind the Music on VH1, it was like they acted like it was like the most important fucking thing ever. You think, like especially after those documentaries and those whatever that you want to call them on VH1, like you'd think, right? Everyone and their mother would want to perform at this shit, right?
Did your mom want to perform at this?
I don't know. We should have asked their moms.
No, but I do get what you're saying. I do. But the bigger band, no, they normally didn't. Like the Beatles were like half together by Woodstock 69.
That's true. But
they had the Who, Quinn.
Didn't even the Beatles like contemplate like choppering in or something? Isn't that talked about?
I don't
like,
think so. Choppering from where? Not from England.
New York. I don't know.
No, but I mean, they had the Who. In 69, that was a big deal.
That was the biggest one, but the Who were always like firmly like number three in the 60s. They
Beatles, Stones, Who.
They're not number one.
Fair enough. Sheryl Crow, who had played 94, she returned for 99, one of the returning artists here. I'm fine with Sheryl Crow, right? No big deal.
Yeah, I mean, she belongs here.
She belongs here. You ever hear of Buck Cherry?
No.
Buck Cherry was another one of those bands. What did you say, Full House?
Was that a band in Full House?
Why would it be?
Because it sounds like Hot Daddy and the Monkey Puppets and that ilk.
Yeah, no, there's a different ilk. Their most popular song is, forgive the term, Crazy Bitch. Right! It's very much a cock rock, if you will, yeah. You know?
And get it, I'm looking at the picture of these guys.
That's what they look like.
Yeah.
Get it? Because it sounds like Chuck Berry.
Is that really what it is?
I don't know, but
I hope you're not.
I hope it is. Why? You know this song? I know this one.
This doesn't ring a bell.
No, that doesn't matter.
Some people are probably yelling at me right now.
That's fine. People are always yelling at us, Quinn.
Gee, I wonder why.
You ever hear of Moby?
Yeah, Moby. I love Moby.
Moby, you do? I didn't know that.
He's all right.
I've known you since this.
I'm not saying I just listen to Moby all the time, but like I don't mind him.
He was on. They had an emerging artist stage.
Was he really emerging in 99? I feel like he'd been around for a bit.
I think he was still technically emerging.
That guy was born old.
He does have that like old worm look to him. The Roots were there, Quinn.
Oh, The Roots.
Yes, The Roots. Questlove and all that. Wow. That's pretty good. And we know these guys mainly from wrestling. We are not Juggalos, but the Insane Clown Posse played on.
I don't really, their music to me is just, and then like, I'm like, oh, they're on the Oddities or whatever. Like,
that's their best song is the Oddities theme music.
Because I understand
by the
words.
Yeah, exactly. And the guy does the thing, like
and the faces
John
are
Tenta with the Cartman.
They're very happy and festive.
It is. Luna's all happy, swinging around.
Even the Insane Clown Posse is pretty festive.
And they wrestle too sometimes. They do. Shaggy 2 Dope and Violent J.
I respect that.
I respect that, too.
I respect that you're a musical artist and you can wrestle.
Hell yeah, man. Yeah. Just like John Cena.
You're willing to take a bump.
He was. They did. George Clinton played again on Friday. Why the hell not?
What is he, like, a
constant? Because he just can, all right?
You're going to tell me he was on night three, too, aren't you?
I wish I could. Yeah. And then here's you wanted a bigger band. Mm-hmm. And this is a big band in 99 coming off of their album Americana, which was in 98. The Offspring.
Okay, there you go.
Right? That's
something big.
Does it satisfy your requirement here? Because, I mean, you know, that's the album, by the way, that had Pretty Fly for a White Guy.
Right.
Which was a big hit.
Now, question, because I don't even know, maybe they're secretly people. Were they trying to, like, exclude the pop crowd on this? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, Britney and Christina and, like, all that.
Christina,
Christina was, like, a year later.
Genie in the Bottle was 99, but it might have been the end of the year. But Baby One More Time was already definitely
right. And were they, like, the Backstreets and NSYNC, were they, like, kind of, like, you're not hard enough for this? Like, was that what was going on here?
Well, because I don't think that Woodstock, from the beginning, was ever supposed to be about pop. And that's fundamentally pop music.
The thing with Woodstock to me, though, and maybe this is just Richie Havens. Which paints my view of it, is that it's supposed to be like all music. Because it's like...
He's like folk music of a degree.
Yeah, but he's not like Jimi Hendrix.
No, I know, but it's still of the same the same core values, I guess.
James Brown's at this thing. You know what I'm saying?
James Brown is a legend, Quinn. Said it yourself.
But that's oldies. Like, my point is, it's like, it's supposed to be a range of music. No, and they have EDM and stuff at this, like the rave tent.
Yeah, and they have
Moby.
So
that's all I'm getting at is that...
He's exciting.
You could have easily slipped in one of these acts that are really popular at this point in time, and then you'd have an extra dimension of people in the crowd.
I'll see what I can do, Quinn.
Yeah.
Korn played on day one, or day two, technically. Yeah, they were a big deal, though, in their own way. And Bush, you ever hear Bush?
Yeah, Bush, yeah, of course.
90s, but very 90s band, but no problem with Bush.
Roll that beautiful bean footage.
All right, on day three, Saturday the 24th, we had Wyclef Jean.
Wow, that's interesting.
We had the Counting Crows, speaking of 90s.
This is all right, so those are two reputable people.
Here's one of my least favorite bands, and sorry if anyone loves this band, the Dave Matthews Band.
They were very big, Joe.
They were. I can't stand them.
Yeah.
And it's nothing personal. It's not like I hate Dave Matthews.
Were there
Bare
Naked
Ladies
at this, too?
I wish. That's the thing.
You
they missed the boat.
It would be great
there.
If the Dave Matthews Band was here and Tender Crisp Cheddar Ranch could have been sung. That would have been fantastic.
That's Hootie and the Blowfish.
Sorry.
That's Darius Rucker.
I always thought Darius is in Dave. No, he's not. You're right.
He's in Hootie.
He's in Hootie.
He is Hootie.
Is Hootie at this? Can we get some Hootie?
No, there's no Hootie. I'm sorry.
Bacon Crisp Bacon Cheddar Ranch.
That's the Tender Crisp Bacon Cheddar Ranch.
It's so good. That would have been a hit.
Yes, a huge hit.
Imagine the whole audience singing along with it.
They would have been throwing shit at that, Quinn. Alanis,
why has everyone got to be so tough? We can't just have fun at Woodstock? What is this?
That is the best way to sum this up, though, this whole event. Why does everyone have to be so tough, right?
If Woodstock 99 took place in, like, 2007 or something, yeah. Like, you know, it would have just been all, like, where's the joke songs and all the bullshit,
yeah,
right?
True,
like,
though.
All the meme crap.
It
like,
is true.
Like,
you're right. You're right. Where's the Burger King jingle?
Yeah.
That's the Tender Crisp Bacon Cheddar Ranch.
Alanis Morissette, who had followed up her amazing run in 95-96, you know, with Jagged Little Pill, where she was huge. She had an album that came out at the end of 98 called Supposed Former Infatuation Junkie. So she is kind of here at Woodstock, I guess, to promote that. It did not do as well, that album. Kid Rock, Quinn, on the Saturday.
Okay, that's a biggie.
It was, I mean, as much as it now, pains me to say it, Bawa to Bawa was my jam in 99.
The thing with Kid Rock is that because of his crossover and being on like TRL and shit, like he was very mainstream.
He was, yes. He was a very mainstream.
That's an actual get for finally.
It was, and that was Bawa to Bawa was huge, and I knew all the words. I probably still know most of the words, truthfully, so I'm not going to lie.
It's a big deal, Joe.
I can't say I've listened to him much, but I loved that
song. There
was
definitely times in my bedroom where I jammed out to Bawa with the Bawa to Bang to Bang, Jiggy Jiggy.
Diggy said the boogie, said I'd jump the boogie.
Yeah, I would do it, and I would go like this.
For D.B. Cooper and the money he took. Yeah. Everclear was there, which they were Everclear by 99.
Everclear.
They were Everclear.
It's like when you say Everclear, I have to be like the drink.
The drink was probably there too.
Or the band.
Yeah, I think they were both there. Ice Cube, speaking of drinks.
Oh, wow. Ice Cube showed up?
He showed up, man.
I didn't even know he was at this. That's awesome.
Ice Cube was there. I like
that. Wow. That's a good one.
That is a good one.
Just waking up in the morning, gotta thank God. I don't know, but today seems kind of odd. No parking from the door, no smoke. And mama cooked the breakfast with no hope.
Here's the two biggies to close out the Saturday lineup. Rage Against the Machine.
Okay, that's big.
Big. And you know, interesting, they're part of the machine here, because Woodstock 99, very machine.
Well, maybe they're internally raging against them, because they're in
true.
It. They're like, oh, let us out.
Fuck this machine. Yeah, that might be right. And here's a band that also played 94, a very big band in general, even in the mainstream, although they have this very, and a very specific audience, would be Metallica.
Right.
That's a name, right?
Sleep with one iota.
Yeah, sleep with
crimping
one.
Your pillow tight.
Sleep with Ray Liotta.
Yeah.
So are you satisfied now with some of these names? We're getting there.
I mean, Metallica.
Rage.
That might be.
Offspring.
I'm putting this into perspective here. I think Metallica actually is technically the biggest thing they got so far. Maybe Kid Rock. As far as the.
Like, contemporaneously.
I'm trying to think of, like, big, right? Very, very big.
I think the James Brown's a big get, too.
Yeah.
I do.
But what I mean by that is bands that could sell out a arena on their own. Like, they don't even need this.
Metallica's definitely up there.
Yeah. They could sell a 100,000 seat arena at the peak of their powers.
100, do you think? Maybe. Maybe they did. For all I know,
like
they could have.
Like a football stadium or something?
It's possible.
Yeah.
Day 4, Sunday, the last day, Willie Nelson was there.
Now you got to have one for the oldies,
gotta
right?
Got to have one for the oldies. The Brian Setzer Orchestra. You know who they are?
Something to do with Brian Setzer.
Brian Setzer was the frontman of the Stray Cats. You know who they are?
Brian Setzer, that name sounds like he's a host on the news.
All right, let me just play some Stray Cats so you know what I mean. Stray Cat Strut would be one. This is that.
Oh, I know this song.
Yeah, that's Brian Setzer.
Okay. When was this
is 80s.
Out?
That's 80s.
Yeah, I was going to say, this sounds like some 80s, like 50s revival, but in the 80s shit.
Yeah, like rockabilly kind of. Not that rockabilly.
Yeah.
Here's another one. I like this guy for the most part, his music. Elvis Costello.
Oh, that's
not bad.
Now, Elvis Costello, I'll say this. In my mind, he was always the, like, well-respected but not high-selling artist.
Like an elder statesman by this point.
Yeah, it's like everyone, like even though he's not the biggest thing in the world, when he comes on, it's like, It doesn't like matter how like uncouth you are. You just stand at attention. It's like, oh, it's Elvis Costello.
Okay, sir.
Everyone, shh. Golf clap.
Yeah, but that is a good point though, because his commercial peak was in the late 70s.
Yeah, but by this point he had this like aura of, like you said, elder statesman of music in general.
He didn't. He had like an impressive discography that just didn't translate to the mainstream. You know?
But like all the other artists, like, you know, they'd be like, behind the music, let's ask Beyonce what she thinks of Elvis Costello. Oh, he's so good. He's just the best. I met him 17 times.
I like that.
He taught me how to play music.
He taught me how to dance.
Yeah.
Seven Dust was there. You ever hear of them?
They have anything to do with Gold Dust?
It's possible. Collective Soul returned from 94. Remember them?
Yeah.
Shine? Remember that? That was a song that we didn't know the name of, and then we listened to it, and we're like, good. Oh, it's that song. Yeah. Godsmack, that's very of their time, and they have a following as well.
Yep.
Megadeth, that's another one of the big...
Megadeth is always a band that I'm
thrash
like...
thrash metal bands.
Are they a big deal? Question mark? Like, every time I hear their name. Like, that's like literally how I feel when... because they have like an epic-sounding name.
Their name is great.
Yeah.
Well, Megadeth is probably... forever in the shadow in the mainstream of like Metallica.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? It's like, but it sounds like, are they some weird elder statesman of like hard rock or something? Like,
I'm not a metal guy, so it would be tough for me to say, but I'm sure this is debated in those circles, mm-hmm. you know, of who's better. I'm sure there's people that are like, yo, fuck Metallica. Megadeth is where it's
Can
at.
Can I just say, like, I feel like music's a weird thing because I hate the concept of like who's better in music because like, it could be the most horrible sounding music, but if it takes a lot of talent to play it, you know, like those weird, like abstract shits, avant-garde stuff that it's like, you have to have like a lot of skill to actually like, even though this sounds like shit, like to do what's like happening here, you have to be like classically trained, know shit about music and be extremely talented. So like, that's why I always have a problem with people saying like, oh, like the nice to listen to stuff is better. What I mean? Like,
but at the same time, Quinn, there is a certain skill in writing a hit pop song.
Absolutely.
You know, so
I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it doesn't mean, is all I'm saying, that one's better than the other.
Fair enough.
It's not that kind of thing to me.
No, I don't think it is worth comparing what's better than another. So what I'd like you guys to do is let us know who you like more, Metallica or Megadeth.
Yeah.
Do that on Twitter at AWM Podcast. All right, so Creed played on day four, as if people weren't already upset enough.
Me higher. I don't even know if that's them. It just sounds like something they would do.
That is them.
Yeah.
No, that's definitely them. And
Titan AE.
And an interesting, I guess, callback to the 60s. They brought on the guitarist from the Doors, Robbie Krieger, who is not like a household name. You know, Jim Morrison is...
The Doors have been... I mean, Jim Morrison died in 69.
71, yeah.
I'm sorry, 71, when he had a beard. And like, they didn't have like Doors 2 or anything.
They did do like a couple of albums with just the three of them without him, and they sang
the other Doors.
Yeah, like, the side Doors. They should have called it.
Why did they not do that? Like, that could have like caught on. It's just like, it's the same thing with how like Joy Division and then New Order, because it's like New Order. Like, it makes sense, right? It's like, this is the New Order.
Right.
Like,
this is the New Order that we do.
This is the New Order of Joy Division. Right. Like, this is how we are now.
I don't know.
Because the other guy died.
Yes, he did. It was sad. I don't know how well it was received with Robbie Krieger of the Doors randomly playing with Creed, but whatever. Here's one. You wanted something a little more conventional, although she wasn't like a huge, huge artist. She had her period of time. Pieces of You. Jewel.
Jewel, okay.
Jewel's a big one.
Jewel was on the TRLs.
Yep, she was on the TRLs.
The Turls.
On the Turlet.
Stop.
Closing out the festival, infamously perhaps, also played 94. We're, of course, talking about the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes.
Yes. Well, big band, though. But By this point,
it really was Red Hot around there.
It was. We will be talking about that. Here's some notable absences, Quinn, and the reason why they didn't play, okay?
So were these people that were, like, scheduled or just never?
Invited.
Invited.
Marilyn Manson, he canceled. I don't know why.
This seems right up his alley, you know?
You would think.
Especially with the clientele around here.
Hole, that's Courtney Love's band.
Mm-hmm.
Scheduling conflict. Foo Fighters were invited. They wanted to finish the album they were working on.
Imagine the Foo Fighters and Courtney Love side by side. See what I did there? Because of Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, I understand.
I know.
High level humor.
I know about music.
You do, though. You do know stuff. Sugar Ray, sadly. Mark McGrath was sick.
That's not sadly.
No. Stone Temple Pilots couldn't get there for scheduling issues.
I say.
That would have been a big get.
Yeah.
Incubus, they wanted to finish their album.
Never liked that.
And I didn't either. And there were other various nu metal bands that were offered.
This is like nu metal stock. It's not even like, what is this? Like, why did they? I just feel like it's not diverse enough.
No, it's not. But here's some of the bands that were invited, but they still had to finish up Ozfest, which was going on at the same time.
I better.
Probably. Them playing this, yeah.
Ozfest, by the way,
yeah.
Just an aside, a credit to Ozfest for just keeps going.
They're still going.
I just respect the gumption of just like a festival born out of Ozzy Osbourne that is like Ozzy's like 80 or something. Like, and they're just like, you know what? We're just going to keep doing it.
It's
like,
pretty good, man.
Yeah.
It is. It really is good. Here's some of those bands that couldn't make it here. Slipknot.
Yeah.
Rob Zombie. System of a Down. Power Man 5000.
Oh, boy.
I only remember them from SmackDown versus
with,
Raw.
Like, makeup and that yells a lot.
And the Deftones, speaking of yelling. So that's the bands. That's some of the music that folks would have gotten to hear. But Woodstock.
It's not real peaceful, huh?
Not really like, peaceful music.
Peace and love. It's not there.
Woodstock 99 is not known for, you know, the music. But we're going to talk about what it's known for. In the meantime, please let us know. Megadeth or Metallica? Do that on Twitter at AWM Podcast. On the other side of this break, we're going to listen to some Richie Havens, and then we're going to talk about the issues at Woodstock 99.
If he inserts that, hit the skip.
Please do. When more Acid Wash Memories returns.
Woodstock Music and Art Fair.
We must be in heaven, man!
The ticket for Woodstock 99 is on sale.
This Friday, no one's bigger.
Get my door just as fast as you get Tom Hanks.
Then Eddie Murphy.
Isn't that cool?
Steve Martin. Eddie Murphy. Bullfinger. Rated PG-13. Starts tomorrow.
Today's forecast looks fabulous. Nothing but sun, sun, sun. Turn off the AC, get off the old sunscreen, trust me. Now to recap, high pressure area means not a trace of moisture.
There are a lot of things you can depend on. Fortunately, there's Wendy's 99 cent super value menu with delicious junior bacon cheeseburgers, cool creamy frosties, biggie fries, and biggie drinks, all for just 99 cents each every day.
It's gonna be great.
It's nice to have something to depend on.
You like today? By golly, you're gonna love tomorrow.
The people who were at this concert are leaving in a fairly orderly fashion, so it is very calm right now in the wake of what happened last night, certainly, which was anything but calm.
And now we return to more Acid Washed Memories.
Hey, welcome back to Acid Washed Memories, episode number 67. We're, of course, talking about Woodstock 99. I'm Joe Murata, alongside Richie Havens' biggest fan, Michael Quinn.
Hi.
Hi. We certainly do thank you guys for being with us here. Just a reminder to follow us on Twitter at AWM Podcast. Join our Facebook group. And hey, wherever you're listening to this on, if it's a podcast application of some kind.
Yeah, those exist.
Those exist. You can leave us a review, most likely. And we'd really appreciate it if you did. All right, Quinn. So we talked about how we got there.
We did.
We talked about when it was. And we talked about some of the more notable names that played there.
These were things we talked about.
And
yes.
Moby.
Yeah.
But Woodstock 99 is known for some issues, and we're here to just kind of recap them. There's, documentaries and other videos that go into greater detail.
Issues is Woodstock 99's middle name. Woodstock Issues 99.
There you go, Quinn. One issue was the concessions. Most infamously, Quinn, water was sold initially at $4 a bottle, which would be about $7.50 today.
Yeah.
That's insane.
No, I remember that getting exaggerated news that it was five, but maybe I'm just crazy.
Well, no.
I just remember that specific number.
You're not crazy.
$5.
By day three of this, it had been gouged up to $12.
Come on. See, that shit should be like illegal or something. Like, because it's water.
It is illegal, technically, yeah. Price gouging, but not in this venue. You
yeah,
know?
But I mean, like, this is one of those situations where here's the deal with water. Like,
What's the deal with water?
If you're doing an event with, like, 400,000 people, it's almost like it's like a fire code thing, like, as far as, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's like a code violation where it's like you have to have, like, you have to at least be able to provide water for free for these people.
You
like,
would
that's
think.
Fucking insane.
No, no, no. I agree with you.
Like,
but
like, people could die without water, especially in the heat.
Absolutely, Quinn. And to give you an idea, folks, $12.99, that's $22.
Yeah, that's
for a
insane.
Bottle of water.
That's insane.
And the other thing to remember here is it did not rain, and it was over 100 degrees all weekend in
Rome,
New York.
Right, and they're on the pavement.
Yeah, and they're in the middle of this nothingness.
Yeah.
Now, there were free water fountains. Obviously, there's going to be issues. Number one is there were insanely long lines. So what people did in frustration was they just broke the pipes, and thus we had mud again. Yay, mud.
Well, that
just
worked
what we
out,
wanted.
I guess.
Yeah, you know what the problem was? This is a former Air Force base that was decommissioned, and the soil was contaminated with chemicals.
Oh, lovely.
And the water was contaminated with E. coli.
Oh, great.
Isn't that nice? So we got bad. You got to poop, right? Everybody poops.
Yeah,
it's
I mean, this is 4 days. You're going to have to take a shit.
At some point.
You could try to hold it in for like two.
Yeah.
Like, but like, yeah, you're not going to make it much further.
No, and preferably shit during Moby or something, yeah. You know, because. So, you know, Quinn, you've been outside. When there's nothing around, no buildings of some kind, normally, what type of temporary structure do you have to go into?
Porta potty.
Yes. Do you think that they had enough of them?
No.
Is there ever enough of them?
And there's people shitting in them.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how disgusting this shit was?
Do you think they had a robust janitorial staff just like cleaning these up?
Absolutely not.
No. So they were overflowing. People who couldn't use the bathroom or didn't want to just pissed wherever they wanted. like we're in a third world country.
So here's the other problem too, is you walled them all in. If you had not done that, right? And
yeah.
Since you're like you are in the middle of nowhere, it would probably actually be more sanitary if people like, I don't know, found a wooded area and just took a shit like, you know, like animals and stuff. And I'm not
it's
calling
true.
People animals. I'm
no,
just
no,
saying
no,
that like taking a shit in the woods is not unsanitary. That's just how, you know, the planet Earth works.
It's just
right?
part of
it's
the
like,
ecosystem, yeah, if you ask me.
Like you're not polluting it by pooping on it. What do you think? Ducks don't poop in the
Oh, they poop.
Yeah, you see what I'm saying? It's like it doesn't like so.
I see
it's not
going to
bother anyone.
It like, shouldn't bother anyone. But shit started flowing everywhere from the combination of the porta potties overflowing, the broken pipes, the mud, and then people.
It's so bad. Like, how the hell do you do this? How do you mess this up? Such a basic thing.
It gets worse. People were jumping in the mud pits to stay cool.
But it was poo?
It was mixed with poo.
And they didn't know.
And they didn't know.
Oh. Imagine jumping in that and you're like, oh.
There was a lot of...
And now you're stuck here.
Yeah.
With poo on you.
Oh. As you might imagine, security was lacking at this. Now, yes, they had volunteers. You know what those volunteers did? They gave up. They wandered around. Some of them sold their security shirts to fans that were there.
Fuck it. This is a shit show at this point. It literally.
Literally a shit show. And there was also... there were also reports of these volunteer security people confiscating alcohol because you're not supposed to have that. And then just drinking it.
Can I just say something?
Which is kind of brilliant,
saying,
but it's fucked
saying
up.
Saying no alcohol allowed at Woodstock
yeah,
is one of the dumbest
doing?
Ideas I've ever heard in my life.
I know.
Like, what?
I know.
That's like saying no weed. Like, it's like,
seriously,
do you know where you are right now?
Right. Exactly. An estimated $22,000 was robbed from the ATMs that were there.
Again, not surprising when people can't even take a shit. You get some aggravated people. They'll just start doing stuff.
I know that I get testy.
Yeah.
You get a little backed up.
All
and,
I'm saying is it's like people, when you deprive people of water and the ability to shit and piss, you are asking.
Those are all human necessities.
Right. If you take away human necessities, people will just start breaking stuff.
Yeah.
Like they'll go nuts. Like
they will.
That's just what's going
to
happen.
They will. These next things is nothing to make light of. I want to be clear. Mm-hmm. There were sexual assaults, you know, on women primarily. And there were also three deaths for various reasons. I have no further comment on that. And it's tragic.
Now, the death aspect, that happened at, like, the first one. It happened. Somebody got, like, run over by, yeah. They were, like, sleeping, and they didn't, it was a complete accident. Like, nobody meant.
I think one of these people had a heart attack. It's, again, there's nothing to be funny about there. 40-something people were arrested. I'm sure that's a very minute amount versus what should have been, but, you know, again.
Yeah.
And in the end, there were over 5,000 medical cases reported by the New York Department of Health due to Woodstock, you know, the contamination, the literal being in human excrement,
right.
The drinking of the water.
I mean, all of this stuff to me, it's like, again, it would have been easily preventable if you weren't trying to nickel and dime everyone. It's like pure greed is the cause.
The water thing is terrible.
The water, like, yeah, that's bad.
It really
is. And not, you gotta take care of the fucking toilets. I know it sounds like such a rudimentary thing.
Yeah.
But when you're moving that kind of people, you have to have an appropriate arrangement for that. Like, you cannot, like, it sounds funny, oh, ha-ha, poo, or whatever.
Yeah, but it's
but
not
like,
funny.
It's not fucking funny when, like, once, the results will add up very quickly when you have that many people in one spot. Like, it's just insane.
Shit does roll downhill.
Yeah.
The only question I have here, this is, I guess, just a discussion, is to staff that many people, what is that going to do to the ticket price, Quinn?
You know, I don't care because I don't want to die because I ate E. coli or some shit.
Like, I think in therein lies the problem.
But,
they didn't care.
Yeah.
But the other way, they just wanted to make a profit this time,
exactly.
You know, rather than, you know, again, a more communal
What's
experience.
What's crazy is that, as we've seen from other festivals that are hugely successful,
and still existing today,
is that these are things that are very simple, right? That, like, they figured out and they make boatloads of cash still.
Yeah, like, I mean, to a degree. Yeah.
What is the why is this so hard? Like, you know what I mean?
Maybe it's just poor planning.
Yeah, I don't know. Or why didn't they, at the very least, why don't you hire somebody who planned Ozfest or Coachella or whatever.
Warped Tour or something.
Yeah, like whatever exists in the 90s, right? It's like, hire one of them and they could tell you, okay, you need this many toilets. You got to have free water, like, somewhere. You can still sell it, but you got to have it somewhere that's, like, easily accessible, like, that doesn't have lines.
Right.
Right, like multiple spigots or something, like...
I guess there's a lot of supply chain in all of that, though, in terms of all, where are you hooking the water up? There's still only one main water line, you know what I mean?
I understand that, but that's their problem to figure out. This is the kind of shit that is supposed to be figured out.
If the aim is to take care of people, yes, but clearly it wasn't here. I think we got that under control. Cleanup, actually, of all of this took 3 weeks. God, imagine being on that crew. I mean, woof, man.
All this stuff, though, happened in the original one.
Like, it happened at both.
Not the poo, but...
No, there was not as much poo.
I don't even think... Was there even porta potties at the original, or did, like, people just, like, go in the woods?
I don't know. I didn't look
into that.
It's
back in the day where, like, they probably... Like, they might have. Like,
they might have.
People just frolic.
A lot of naked people.
Yeah, they just frolic into
Quinn.
The woods. And
frolic.
I got done tinkling or whatever
they
say.
I went tinkle.
Yeah,
And it was groovy.
It was groovy, man.
some specific timeline of events here. This is not everything that happened, but just to give you a rundown... Someone threw poop at Sheryl Crow.
Okay.
After the crowd repeatedly chanted for her to show her crows.
It's really civil.
And
in
then
this
the,
place.
The counting crows were counting those crows. Sorry. Dexter Holland, that's the Offspring's lead singer, he was hit with a beer bottle. The Insane Clown Posse.
I gotta say, a lot of this is the venue's fault, if you think about it, because, like I said, they created the conditions for the crowd to get very angry.
I think so. The Insane Clown Posse taped $100 bills to beach balls and then kicked them into the crowd. And you have a crowd of people and they see free money.
And they need money for water.
What do you think they're going to do?
Beat each other up for the money.
Yeah. Like, so that was good. And smart idea.
Yeah.
The Tragically Hip, who was a band from Canada that played right before Kid Rock, they weren't extremely popular, but they were Tragically Hip, obviously.
Uh-huh.
They got stuff thrown at them for being Canadian, I presume. They sang
for being Canadian. What?
Well, you know, and so they sang "O Canada," and the crowd retorted by singing the "Star Spangled Banner."
Okay,
and then and that was nice. Kid Rock and Wyclef Jean both told the audience to throw their empty water bottles on stage.
Oh, I'm sure nobody got hurt because of that.
No, and apparently that was supposed to be a protest against the price of water.
Right, because we got to take a stand, man. Rock and roll, right?
As like. That, and you know what happened miraculously? Once everyone threw their water balls on stage, water was just free for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, Limp Bizkit is the most infamous and generally has the finger pointed at them for a lot of this, which I actually don't totally agree with.
Okay, what did they do? What's the offense, first of all?
First of all, as much as Limp Bizkit annoys me, I do need to say that, you know, they've gotten a lot of the blame because during their set, they played break stuff.
Yes.
It's just one of those days when you don't want to wake up. Everything is fucked, everybody sucks. You don't really know why, but you want to justify that there's someone set up.
I remember this being like they shouldn't have played their song. Like,
I know.
As I didn't understand that.
But what often gets overlooked, and maybe this has been restored somewhat in all these documentaries, is Fred Durst did tell the crowd not to let anyone get hurt. He's like, if someone fucking falls, pick them up. Like, don't let them get hurt. The other thing, though, is he told them not to calm down. And that's, you know, a little dicey.
I get what he meant, but also that could be misinterpreted.
When you have people that haven't shat, you know, in the right place and haven't drank water, they might get a little, you know, a little clouded judgment there.
Yeah.
So during break stuff, people did break stuff. They broke off pieces of the plywood wall and wanted to have people crowd surf on it. Fred Durst himself crowd surfed on a piece of the plywood. So that's doing well. And on the last day, this is where
the notable, right?
Yeah.
It's like this is where it's just anarchy at this point.
Yeah. So Columbine had happened a few months prior.
Right.
And there was an anti-gun group, an activist group, that had handed out hundreds of candles to people with the anticipation that during Under the Bridge by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, it would be like a vigil for Columbine, which is theoretically a nice gesture.
Right.
The choice of venue perhaps is a little misguided.
The problem now is, again, there's people deprived of taking a shit and water.
Yeah.
So whatever you hand these people, it's going to become destructive.
I think that's true.
Very quickly.
You could hand them Nerf and it would still be destructive. Yeah. They'd find ways. So Red Hot Chili Pepper comes out and they do their set. And by the way, this is with John Frusciante now. He's back, you know, since Californication. No more David Navarro.
Dave Navarro.
Dave Navarro.
From Jane Addiction and the Red Chili Peppers. David Navarro.
During the Red Hot Chili Peppers set, shit caught on fire because a bunch of the crowd has candles. So, like, garbage is catching on fire. Plywood is catching on fire.
So, the visual of this, right, that I remember is, like, for some reason, it didn't all, like, it wasn't just, like, one big fire.
No.
It was, like, multiple fires in, like, different areas in the crowd. And it just looked like hell on earth or something. Like, from, like, when they pan the camera out, it just looked horrible.
Post-apocalyptic.
Yeah.
You know?
You see this, like, red glaze over it, and, like, it's everything's burning, and there's multiple things burning. It looks like mountains of stuff is burning.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
It's terrible. It got so bad that an audio tower caught on fire.
Which wasn't surprising.
Right.
Considering the situation.
People climbed it for shits, and then, of course, it fell over. So
yeah,
that's good.
Did anyone die from that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Now, the Peppers, they played the Jimi Hendrix song Fire.
I have only one burning desire. Okay, let me stand as your fire. 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 Let me stand as your fire.
They got blamed for that. They're like, what the fuck are you doing? And then they said it's just a coincidence. This, they had already worked out that they were going to play this.
So this was on the set or whatever.
In honor, of Jimi Hendrix, who obviously played at 30 years ago at Woodstock. I don't believe them. But but I could be wrong.
Or they could have at least been like, maybe this isn't a good time to play this.
Right. They could have scrapped it, right? Now, things got so bad that the guys from MTV...
Didn't they just leave or something?
Yes. Yeah. So Carson Daly was there. Kurt Loder was there. MTV said, enough of this. They pulled them like before it was over on that Sunday. They just get out of here.
Right.
They described it as a war zone. Here's what Kurt Loder had to say. It was dangerous to be around. The whole scene was scary. There were just waves of hatred bouncing around the place. I think that that sums it up because, I mean, for some reason, the culture within Woodstock 99 was one of anger. The mood was anger seemingly the whole weekend.
Well, it was anger to begin with, but it was also fueled by things to make people more angry, right?
This is true.
So why it's like dumping kerosene on already like, you know, a small flame, and then it just becomes a big one.
That's what happened.
Yeah.
It's a shame, too, because a shame is putting it lightly. You know, I don't mean to make light of it, but it's unfortunate that the music, there's some good acts on there. There's some good artists on there. I know it's not as varied as perhaps, you know, you would like, Quinn. Right. It's very new
metal. I just mean it's just different.
Yeah, I know.
To me, again, maybe it's just how I interpret the first Woodstock as like more dynamic and like different stuff.
I guess it was still
like all over the place.
I guess in a way, though, this all was connected for the most part. I mean, James Brown is a bit of an outlier. So is George Clinton.
I just mean that it was like, this is so new metal heavy that it's like, yeah.
It was. No
wonder there's so much anger. It has a tone.
There can be a tone, you know, and certainly I don't disparage that music. Mm-hmm. You know, people like it. Anthony Kiedis of the Red Hot Chili Peppers said, "It was clear that this situation had nothing to do with Woodstock anymore.
No.
It wasn't symbolic of peace and love, but of greed and cashing in." Well, I think like that's the problem.
Yeah, and I mean, the crowd also, in a sense, was a rebellion against consumerism and capitalism, maybe, to an extent. Like, just the concept of just trying to, like, ream people out for any nickel or dime, you know?
And you know what's interesting? That, in itself, is a very 1960s ethos.
Right. This is like, instead of tackling it with peace and love, man, everyone's just like, fuck these people. And they like started like, you know, beating people up and like destroying the place and stuff.
They really did break stuff, as the Limp Bizkit song says. It sucks. I mean, the bottom line here, there's no happy ending to this, really. I guess, you know what the happy ending is? They never did a Woodstock after this.
Did they incur a loss because of this?
They still didn't. The city of Rome did profit. I don't know about the promoters.
So I was going to say, it seemed like they took all precautions to at least make money. Like, that was like, no matter what went wrong, they were going to make money.
I know, but what does it profit the man if you gain Woodstock and lose the whole world, Quinn? Yeah. You know what I mean?
So this is usually listed as the reason there just hasn't been a Woodstock again, right? It's because of this?
For the most part. I mean, they did try to get one together in 2019, Woodstock 50.
So I feel like the times are different. People are still, you know, people are still people and get angry and stuff. But like,
yes, they do.
There's also,
especially on the internet.
Here's the thing, like with music, I feel like music in a weird way has become self-aware to the point of like humorous in a sense where like just to say that there's a little more light in it. Right. It's viewed more entertainment-y than it is like,
let's make a statement.
Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? Is like, maybe it's kind of the time for that because then people can just have fun. Right.
Well, I think that music
is, as long as you don't mix politics in it, which is that's the thing that gets people riled up nowadays.
That's what gets people riled up on either side. But
yeah.
I think that music is a form of expression. It's a form of art.
Right. I'm just saying as far as
it's not strictly commercialism and have fun.
All I'm saying is as far as the popular culture's perception and whatnot is now we're in a phase of music, I feel like, where it's a show businessy, almost 50s-esque, like a...
In a way, we've gone backwards to the pre-rock and roll era.
That might be just a rejection of just like sometimes even growing up when I was looking at music, I was always like, why must there always be a statement? Why can't we just enjoy it? Right? Like,
I understand, and I
feel like that's permeated through the mainstream now. It's like people just want to enjoy it. They just want a show. They want costumes and light shows and stuff. And that's not to say they're soft or anything. It's just they're trying to escape life, you know?
Not be reminded of life.
Yeah, they're just trying to be like, I just want like a fantasy on the stage, you know, just some crazy thing.
I mean, there might be some truth to that. But I think that what you're speaking of certainly has the mainstream audience. There are still definitely segments of music fans that want that statement, that want to identify,
of course,
with the beliefs of whatever band or artist it is. And there's nothing wrong
I'm
with that either.
I'm just saying the popular culture end of it is like, what's the actual thing like the majority wants?
They just want to have fun.
And it's these stage shows.
I
think we've talked about it recently in some other music thing about how like Nicki Minaj and Taylor Swift and like all of this stuff.
Miley
and, you know, everything's like a crazy, colorful diversity and like fantasy and like, you know, like it's almost peace and love a little bit too. Like, you know what I mean? Like I just feel like Woodstock actually kind of would make a little bit of sense if you kind of framed it in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, Woodstock 2019 was going to happen. It got booted eventually due to various delays, permitting was one of the things.
Yeah.
The site kept getting changed. At one point, they were going to move to Maryland. They just couldn't get it together. And I don't know if it's the Woodstock stigma.
Right.
But part of me wants to believe it is. I don't know why. But it shouldn't be, because how many friggin' festivals are there now?
You know, if I was planning Woodstock, I would change its image with the next Woodstock. I would invite all these big, fantastical acts, because then it changes the vibe. Suddenly it's peaceful and it's entertainment-y and it's, you know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. But how does that differentiate it from some of the other festivals that do feature all the pop acts?
I think outdoors is the difference. And summery. You take the positive of Woodstock, like the environments and the people being together. Yes. That's all I'm saying. It's like,
I get what you mean.
I'm not even like a concert planner, and I can tell you these simple things to like maybe not make it a fucking riot.
Folks, if you need more concert planning tips, you can reach out to Michael Quinn on Twitter at SilentQ15.
Free water. How about that?
A place to use the bathroom.
Yes.
That isn't disgusting.
Maybe even you could find a venue that had toilets that flushed. That would be unbelievable.
That's hard to find in normal life, you know, in businesses. The nice toilets.
Well, do it. I got an idea.
Yeah.
This is a big idea. Pick one of those, like, maybe a Walmart that closed down or like something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like somewhere where there could be like
Walmarts don't close
facilities.
Down. Yeah.
And then,
an old Caldor or something.
You do it where there's at least some open area right next to it, right? And then you can still do it outdoors. But then people, if they need to, maybe there's air conditioner in there or bathrooms, and they can, you know, poopy.
I think that we need to put all of our collective heads together and we need to plan Quinstock. The first ever Quinstock, folks.
True peace and love. That's my, that's what it would be.
What about food? What are we going to do for food?
We can get a bunch of volunteers to barbecue. It'll be very good. Hot dogs and hamburgers.
Hot dogs, hamburgers, and
ribs.
Bring your own sides, right? Every fan brings a side.
Yeah, it's on the tickets. Like, if you didn't bring food, go home.
Yeah,
like,
go home. One side minimum.
Everyone has to bring. So imagine that. There'd be, like, food for everyone.
It'd be a potluck is what it would be, Quinn.
This would be the best concert ever. 100,000 people. Everyone brings food. You know, we're barbecuing. The greatest acts in the world. It's all, like, it's like the big, like, crazy ones, like where it's like just these like crazy sets and everything. Like,
and how much do tickets cost, Quinn?
You have to deduct some money because people are bringing their own food, right? So obviously you got to be like, listen, the tickets, that's it, we get them, the tickets are cheaper if you bring your own food. Or you don't have to bring like food for the whole festival, just like a thing. So you bring like pot roast or whatever you can
pot
make.
Pot roast?
You bring the sodas.
That's what I want to do. I want to be chomping on some pot roast.
I mean, think about it, Joe. 10,000 people. If 10,000 people brought a 12-pack, just one 12-pack of Coca-Cola, then there'd be a lot of Coca-Cola for everyone.
Is there drinking allowed or just Coca-Cola?
No. This is just like, that's just an example. Like just another 10,000 people, they brought hot dogs.
Folks, we hope you
a pack. You have to bring a pack because it can't. Obviously, if it was one for one, it wouldn't be enough.
But. Right, of course. On behalf of Quinn and myself, we invite you to Quinn Fest. The date to be determined, you know, but this will happen at some point.
It's all in planning phases.
We'll get the hottest acts of today and yesterday.
Imagine the acts signing up for this just because it's such a like nice idea.
Very quaint.
Yeah, very like
Quinn's quaint Quinn Fest.
You got Beyonce having some barbecue over here.
Who wouldn't want to?
Who else? Justin Timberlake over there.
He'll be there.
He brought some Budweiser.
He did.
Yeah. Like even the acts have to bring food. Like it's like a whole thing. Like,
yeah, I'm sure that's what they want to do. It's like selling your own tickets. That's what they want to go back to.
No. I'm saying this is being in the spirit, Joe. Right? It's you got to be in the spirit. Right? That the acts are not doing it because we're making them. It's because they want to help. It's like the big help.
I will say this, Michael Quinn. As idealistic as this is, it does sound quite pleasant. It certainly sounds better than Woodstock 99.
Yes.
That was not a good time. Why did we talk about it? I don't know. I felt like we should have. Woodstock 99 was 30 years since the original.
This is true.
It is now 25 years since that. I think it's only right. We won't do this again in 5 years. We won't talk about it again, right? So
unless the new Woodstock, and then I can throw my suggestions in.
Yeah, well, I would appreciate that.
Folks, I have ideas, folks. for the greatest festival of all time.
If you want to hear Quinn's ideas, recipes, and more, please follow us on Twitter at AWM Podcast. Join our Facebook group. Let us know, Metallica or Megadeth. That's the important takeaway from this episode. But really, one way or another, maybe you went to Woodstock 99. Remember, you remember watching it. I certainly remember being cognizant of it and checking it out on the news more than anything. But
well, I remember the burning more than the music.
Yeah, unfortunately, so do most people. But let us know your thoughts, your memories, and anything else. We will, of course, be back next week for something completely different. Until that time, we sure do appreciate you being with us here. We'll see you next time for more Acid Wash Memories.
See ya.
Like what you heard? Be sure to leave a review and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. We will see you next week.